Guardian Unlimited.
Well, it's got very long legs.
Looks like a spider.
I'd say about 20 feet.
Someone's imagination of what a spider could be, I think.
I feel like I'm in a cage and I've got arachnophobia.
It's stalking the courtyard.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Jones and we're standing outside Tate Modern beside the Thames in London. Lovely view of St. Paul's and a gigantic, colossal spider looming above my head. I would say it looked very strange and disconcerting and unhomely, except for two reasons. Firstly, well, this is Tate Modern, what do you expect? And secondly, this is Tate Modern and this is a work by Louise Bourgeois, who was the first artist that anybody ever saw at Tate Modern. She was the artist who had the first installation in the Turbine Hall when the place opened 7 years ago. And now she's come back for a retrospective and now we're going to go inside the museum and see it. In the last 20 years, Louise Bourgeois has become one of the most eminent artists on the planet. Tremendous influence on younger artists. And she's seen as in the same class as Jasper Johns, Cy Twombly. Oh, we're walking up the staircase. Well, we're mad rather than going on the escalators. I mean, it's an interesting juxtaposition at the moment at Tate Modern because they also have the huge crack, which has become very famous, which has been opened up in the floor of the Turbine Hall by Doris Salcedo. And actually, apart from the fact both artists are women, there's probably a lot in common between them as artists, that they do things about the home, about inner space. It's two artists who are perhaps associated more with introspection and with sensitivity and with a strong, almost surrealist sensibility. So we're now in front of the exhibition, we're about to go in the exhibition, and here is Frances Morris. You curated the exhibition, obviously, and I mean, perhaps we should start by going in. We're here in the first room of the show, which begins with early paintings by Louise Bourgeois on the walls, which involve houses and women. They're a pun on the idea of a housewife. Louise Bourgeois, obviously, she's French. I mean, she's born in France, she goes to America. What was it about her childhood that so obsesses her?
Well, in the opening room, it's got a very recent work, this cell called Cell Choisie, after her childhood home, Choisie and Choisie-le-Roi in France, and also combined with these early paintings of the housewife, the femme maison, two overriding concerns, the home and women's place within it. Now, Louise Bourgeois was a powerful daughter of a powerful mother, and she then became a powerful mother. Family relationships are a key to understanding her work. And one principal reason for that is the traumas that fractured her childhood home.
What are those?
Well, very simply, I mean, they're traumas that happen to a lot of people, but Louise's father, who was an erudite but an opinionated and domineering man, hired an English nanny for his children. She was called Sadie. She was from London. But he then proceeded to have an affair with her. It turned into a ménage à trois. It went on for years. It soured the relationship between husband and wife, between father
so it became
and mother,
a,
and
it
really
became
dominated.
Public.
Well, it became the veiled secret. Everybody knew, but nobody spoke. So there was this terrible gloom and pallor over the house. And Louise was, as a child, very close to both her mother and father. So, you know, she obviously suffered some very serious trauma as a result. And in a very real way, all her work has been revisiting those early memories.
And what decade are we talking about?
But she was born in 1911, so we're talking about, you know, it's pre-First World War. And the world, of course, was very small. It was very different. So she was brought up in a milieu where she could be brought up in this rural area, and yet she spent her holidays in the south of France. She met Bonnard. As a student, she went to Paris. She met Breton. It was very easy for her
and
to
Léger,
move
into
those...
Was it true that Léger, Léger was another...
she studied maths at the Sorbonne, but then subsequently she went to study in various artist studios. That's the way you did it in those days. You didn't go to art school. You went to an atelier.
But she left France. She migrated to America.
Well, I think there was in Louise's work, there's this kind of ebb and flow. There's this tremendous draw to her family. And she's continuously going back to those memories and revisiting the past. But there's also a real urge to escape. And that urge to escape allowed her to leave France at the end of the 1930s on her marriage to Robert Goldwater, an American citizen. And she went to New York, never really to return to Europe.
So we're now moving into the second room of the exhibition. I think the works in here are tremendous. These are the works that Louise Bourgeois was making in New York in the 1940s. And they're very upright. They're reminiscent of African art or perhaps of oceanic art from the Pacific. To me, looking at this, what it reminds me of is going to the Metropolitan Museum in New York and going to the galleries of, you know, the ethnographic collections. It's very ethnographic and it's so powerful. It's very, it's really totemistic and powerful.
I like to think of Louise Bourgeois in some ways as a piece of blotting paper. She absorbed everything that came her way. She absorbed multiple influences but turned them into something completely unique. So when you look at this work, you do think of tribal sculpture from the Metropolitan. You do think about Brancusi. You do think about Max Ernst. Multiple influences that are all morphed into this very original work. And this time, Louise had just got to New York. She had three children under 10. She lived in a building on Upper East Side called Stuyvesant's Folly. She didn't have a studio, but she had the rooftop. And it's amazing to think of her making these very tall, kind of atelierated sculptures amongst the surroundings of Manhattan,
very
rising
poetic,
from the ground.
Image.
Very, very poetic, but I think
beautiful
there is
image, yeah.
Genuinely a sense that architecture, the architecture of the house, the architecture of the city, keeps coming back as an influence in her work.
It was a great time for an artist to move to New York. It was the moment when obviously a lot of the surrealists fled to New York. There was a tremendous ferment of ideas. The thing at the time in the 1950s and 60s, what was famous for was, you know, the birth of abstract expressionism, Pollock, Rothko. Artists you can follow in the Tate Modern collection downstairs.
It was a very vibrant time in New York. In a way, Paris had passed the mantle on. All the emigres had arrived in New York. New York was busy, invented abstract expressionism on the basis of kind of French pre-war modernism, but also surrealism and the reassessment of the primitive. But the crucial thing is Louise was a woman. All that generated very male, very macho, very aggressive, very huge about the grand gestures. Bourgeois was not only female, but she was also bringing up a family. And in some ways, she remains connected but disconnected from that. So I think there is a very close dialogue between her work and the work of the abstract expressionists, but there is a separation. There's a continuous dialogue in her work throughout it between abstraction and figuration. They are really amongst her most abstract works, but they're abstract, and yet they really strongly remind me of partly buildings, but also partly people. When you begin to look at them, you can kind of see, you know, things that could be packages being carried, or eyes, or you know, limbs. And there's a very strong association with people.
Right, we're moving on now through the show, and we're going to skip a few rooms, although we're walking quickly through them. Another fantastic room full of early sculptures, which are now becoming less totemic, more geometrical in a way, but they've still got this very physical quality, like resembling human bodies. And I suppose if you wanted to sum up Louise Bourgeois, you'd say that everything she does is very organic. There's a sense of the body, not just the exterior of the body, but the inner life of the body in all her work. Now we're coming into the sort of, I suppose you might say, the mature Louise Bourgeois, when she's taken a break from art and she comes back. And Frances, I mean, she sort of, there's a big change in her work at this point.
Well, she seems to have taken a break between sort of
in the 60s now.
Mid-1950s and early 1960s. And the story, as it goes, is that she withdrew from making art. She went back to school. She studied psychoanalysis. She did a bit of teaching. She also, for a time, ran a bookshop, a children's bookshop, of antiquarian children's books. At the same time, they moved from their uptown house to a brownstone in Chelsea. And I think this is really interesting. Instead of working on the roof, she started working in the basement. And after about 8 years of nobody quite knowing what was going on, she emerged to the light with this very strange, subterranean, very organic, visceral work, which the materials are completely different in place of the wood, in place of kind of hard material. She's using soft materials like plaster and latex. And instead of the references to modernist buildings and the human exterior form, there seems to be much more of an emphasis on internal spaces, interior body spaces, visceral sort of sexual parts, but also the kind of living spaces that you associate with nature, like nests and lairs and caves. Mm. So, you know, suddenly the work becomes very subterranean and very, very dark and incredibly original.
In fact, the piece we're actually looking at is called Le Regard, The Look, and perhaps it captures all this idea of, first of all, it's incredibly fleshy and organic. It's made of
it's a latex.
And it looks like something a spider might have secreted, or a bee, or something from beeswaxy. But then you can see an eye. It kind of opens up into an eye.
It could be like an eye opening, or it could be like a vagina, or it could be an open wound. It's kind of separating. It's kind of rather disgusting, but as I said, very, very evocative. You know, it reminds you of other things. Unlike minimalism, which just refer to themselves, this really opens you up into a very sort of imaginative realm where you're left on your own to make your own discoveries.
Question that I wanted to ask, and this is as good a place as any, is Louise Bourgeois a surrealist?
She would bat me over the head if I said she was a surrealist. She has been extraordinarily influenced by surrealism. She was never a card-carrying surrealist. Her work is much too literary. It's much too, in a way, narrative. It's works very directly associating with real memories and real associations. It's not really about dreams.
We're moving on now into the next room, which it becomes even more ripened organic and fleshy and erotic, and there are these sculptures hanging from the ceiling which are, they're like testicles, or perhaps they're like breasts, or perhaps they're like buttocks. They're certainly about the body, but they're kind of in a way that's very mutating and metamorphosizing.
These are four of Louise's Janus heads, and like quite a number of pieces in this room, you don't quite know whether they're male or they're female, but they're certainly sexual parts, their breasts or their phalluses. And they're hanging. I love this. They're often these sort of hanging penises, limp or occasionally erect. But in all of these works, there is this dialogue between male and female. And of course, that's the great underlying theme of Louise's work. You know, is she, isn't she? You know, he, she, it's mother, father, male, female. The kind of complexity of gender relationships is very important to her.
There's a kind of science fiction quality to this room. There's a piece we're standing next to, and it's really like something from Ridley Scott's Alien, I think.
It is the most extraordinary piece, and it's just incredible to think that it was done in the 1960s.
It's a sort of a hybrid flower made up out of plaster, which has been worked with the fingers, and on the top there's lots of kind of egg-like structures. It's as if it's like a nest of eggs, but then they turn into an organic mass underneath that sort of flows down like an old gnarled tree, or like cake mix,
and or like vomit.
I mean, or like vomit.
And if you look underneath this creature, in the kind of gap between its flowing members, there are strange bulbous
intestines,
things hanging down. They're testicles or intestines or eggs. It's kind of a living thing, but it's a landscape. Very strange.
Ah. And now this is really like science fiction. This is some kind of horror film nest. And perhaps you'd like to describe it, Francis.
Well, this is a room within a room. It's an installation of latex bulbous forms around a table, which is strewn with remnants of some grotesque meal. The whole thing is lit in red light, and it's almost like looking into a sort of womb-like or fire-like interior. It was actually called The Destruction of the Father, and it was made in 1974. And it relates to an incident from Louise's childhood, or I think actually a fantasy, a repeated fantasy that she had as a child, of clearly sitting around the dinner table with her father and mother and siblings was a torment, because her father was one of these hugely domineering chaps who droned on and on and on, and you know, in a very selfish, very lordly way. And the young children, Louise and her siblings, obviously couldn't bear this. They were just desperate to get down and run away and play. So Louise would fantasize that at some moment of particular torment, her family would rise up as one and grab the father and throw him onto the table, and they would devour him and cut him up with their knives and forks and consume him. So The Destruction of the Father, about cannibalism, about absorbing the one who torments you.
Now she's working in. We find her working in marble, having gone into very organic materials. We suddenly find her making
just organic things in marble and metal.
Sort
of typical of Bourgeois. Just as you get comfortable with her in one medium, she decides to do it in another, and she's almost sort of unable to stick.
This work dates from the 80s.
This whole room that we're in, which has marble pieces in it, they date from the 1960s to the late 80s. So it's quite a wide sweep of time in this room. But she started going to Italy in the 1960s, and she worked with, you know, master masons, firstly to make work that formally looks very like the latex work. So this piece here, for example, which is called Cumul, beautiful white marble piece, cumul after cumulus clouds, but again has these sort of phallic sticky up bits, was a very early work in marble. And what I think what's interesting is that I think we tend to associate women artists in the 70s with those new materials like latex and plaster, soft, feminine things. But actually, Louise couldn't resist taking on the male tradition of marble sculpture. And in terms of its making, it's very traditionally made with this wonderful fabric drapeggio all around it. So really taking on the tradition. And that one's beautifully made. But if you look at, across the room to the one called Femme Maison, which again has lots of fabric in it, that's one where Louise had much more of her own chisel involved. Mm. And it's not quite as skillful as when she worked with a master technician.
At what point would you say that she became famous, as it were, in the art world anyway? I mean, that she is it in the 80s really that she becomes sort of suddenly very crucial?
She had, throughout from the 60s onwards, late 60s onwards, her reputation grew. Mm. In 1982, she did have a major retrospective at the age of, what, almost 71, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And that was the first retrospective ever given to a woman from the Museum of Modern Art.
We're now going to walk on into the, I guess, the works which certainly, well, certainly they were the first big work, important works that I saw by Louise Bourgeois, and really I think a lot of people's introduction to her in the 90s was through these works called cells, which are very much installations, sealed units. They're cages, or they're sealed off by wooden screens, and they have little worlds inside them. They're almost like looking inside a novel. And in fact, obviously, as you've told us more about her life, it's like a novel, isn't it? It's like it's strange. It's like you might think of a magic realist novel. This one we're looking at seems to be an incredibly sort of epic autobiographical mélange, really.
I think what's interesting about Louise is that I think she draws attention to the fact that probably all our lives are this rich. You know, we all have amazing autobiographies, but the difference is that Louise has taken hers and she's spun her tale, and she's made these scenarios and tableaus, and she's explored it, and she's found metaphors and symbols for it.
And to describe them visually, inner worlds, they're sort of... what I'm looking at is it's a huge, very long wire cage. It's almost like a bird, like an aviary, actually, an old aviary at London Zoo. And inside it, there are a series of rooms, and they're filled with objects which are clearly, you can tell straight away that they're personal, they're old, they're battered, there's battered chairs, there's sculptures, there's things sealed inside bubbles. So there's a sense of personal relics, but obviously it also evokes rooms and inner spaces, and that the house, you're talking about this house that she grew up in as a child, and
yeah,
you know
all
that,
those
all that,
things,
all
those
that
things.
You can see straight away.
And this one is called, this big one, it's the biggest cell in this room, it's called Passage Dangereux, Dangerous Passage. So I think the idea is that it's about, as you move through different scenarios, either, you know, in a place or through life potentially, and we know enough about Louise's life, and even on a cursory look, we know enough about Louise's life to pick out things that are deeply autobiographical. So they're pieces of tapestry inside the rooms. There are, for example, at the end of the chamber, chairs hanging from the ceiling. Now, if you look at the family photographs, you'll see that her father's workshop, he stored all the chairs waiting to be restored from the ceiling. So that must have been, hanging from the ceiling, that must have been a very, very early memory. There's a prosthetic leg hanging down again in that last chamber. Now, I happen to know as a fact that leg was thrown out of a neighbouring house in Chelsea in New York. Louise, she's a great scavenger of materials for these works, you know, brought it in and found a use for it. But again, knowing about her family, her sister had a condition of the leg which meant she was lame. So as you get to know the story of her life, the literal meaning of some of these symbols becomes clear.
How crucial to her view of herself as an artist is being a woman artist? I mean, I was thinking about the spider. We saw a spider when we came in. There's an installation in this room which has a spider looming over a cage in which there's old furniture and tapestries. But I suppose the spider, the fable of Arachne, is, I guess, very important. The sort of, in terms of mythology, the fable of Arachne is very important to an image of women's creativity, I guess.
It's an interesting one. A lot of her work is about women. A lot is about being a mother. A lot is about being a daughter. A lot is about being a female child. But I don't think it's crucial to her to be a woman artist. She's an artist who explores femininity, but also equally masculinity and the relationship between the two. But she's staunchly individual. I think she would... the idea of Bourgeois as a feminist is a difficult one, because she's not a card-carrying or a flag-waving feminist, and she doesn't sign manifestos. But in every thought and word and deed, she speaks for the power of women and women's autonomy.
Is her art going to become and remain one of the big forces and kind of icons of through this century, in the 21st century? Is she going to be remembered as one of the 20th century's great artists?
I think there will be her reputation will evolve and change after her death. It'll be interesting to see how far the life story sticks with the work.
My feelings about Bourgeois are kind of constantly changing.
Well, in that
sometimes I think her work is absolutely fantastic. Other times I think, and I don't know why that is, and I don't know whether it's unevenness in the work. We naturally, compared to some of her work to cinema, you know, horror films, science fiction films, with the installations, when they get very big and theatrical, it's like, you know, wow, wouldn't it be fantastic sets at the National Theatre? Mm. And then you think about novels, her life as a novel. If you go here and you look at the Mark Rothko paintings, that's like nothing else.
She's a hybrid.
What does she give the... She's a hybrid artist.
She breaks
the
boundaries.
I mean, is that just what art is now, artism or hybrid things?
I suppose if there's one thing that Louise did, is she did break the modernist paradigm. Yeah. She's truly a hybrid artist.
Yeah.
And so the notion of theatricality, of cinema, of theatre, of that kind of hybrid media and experiences is absolutely central to Louise's work. If you regard that as an ethical issue... I don't see that as in a good or bad sense. I just see it as something that is... It is. That's how her work is.
Yeah.
I don't think unevenness is the right word. I think it's hugely expansive. So that you'll go with some of it, and then there are other bits you won't go with.
Maybe history will sort this out. I suppose it will. I mean, you know, will it continue to look as powerful as it does?
Well, that's
now,
hence my curiosity. But in 50 years' time, will the life be so important? Will we really mind about Sadie the nanny?
And actually, forgetting just about art now, but with artists who have a powerful life, as it were, and a powerful personality, it's actually very hard to disentangle what...
Yeah, and that's what, with the business we're in, art and its history, is about revising history all the time. So
exactly.
We'll come back to it and we'll rethink
it. But thanks very much. You've given me a beautiful exposition at the show, actually, and it's certainly made me think a lot and understand her work better. And thanks very much. I'm Jonathan Jones.
Guardian Unlimited.